Find your missing ingredient at the 2024 National Restaurant Show. Whether you're looking to adapt your offerings to satisfy shifting dinner expectations, seamlessly navigate razor-thin margins, or integrate next-era solutions to offset labor challenges, the show has everything you need to plate up success for your operation. See tomorrow's ideas come to life and find inspiration for your next big concept as you explore a bustling show floor featuring over 900 product categories. From award-winning food and beverage items to innovative back-of-house equipment and technology. Join your peers at the show for Food Service in Chicago, May 18th to 21st, and get a taste of the future. Visit the official show website at www.nationalrestaurantshow.com to register and learn more.
Welcome to Menu Feed, a weekly podcast from Restaurant Business and Food Service Director. I'm Pat Kobe, Senior Menu Editor covering both brands. Joining me on the podcast is Sarah Bradley, chef owner of Freight House in Paducah, Kentucky. Sarah grew up in Paducah, and after working in Michelin-starred restaurants in New York and Chicago, she knew she wanted to be her own boss and return to her roots. Her mission in starting Freight House was to have a technique-driven yet accessible restaurant where all guests could feel comfortable dining and all team members could experience true work-life balance. She has achieved that goal with a rotating menu that spotlights specialties like braised pork shoulder with field peas and sweet greens, but it's chefed up with fennel aioli. And that joins a simple local heirloom carrots with brown butter parmesan polenta and candied pecans. Desserts include her signature peanut butter chess pie and strawberry shortcake with goat cheese fluff. Freight House also boasts an extensive bourbon collection. With March designated as International Women's Month, it is most fitting to hear about how Sarah, the mother of two young daughters herself, has created a compassionate restaurant environment that fosters work-life balance. Listen as she describes how she manages it all, including her successful run on Top Chef World All-Stars and her involvement in two local nonprofits, while operating a destination dining spot for locals and travelers alike. Welcome, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
I am so excited to be here.
Well, I echo that sentiment. So let's begin by you telling me a little bit about your culinary journey and how you landed at Freight House.
So I'm from Paducah, Kentucky. I left right after graduating high school and, went to the University of Kentucky, graduated from there. And then I always had jobs working in the kitchen or in a bar or doing something with food service. And so, after not really loving the career path that I chose, I decided I would go back to culinary school. And I always thought it was something I wanted to do, but it was kind of before the time of like the Food Network chef and all that stuff. So I didn't really think it was a feasible thing. But it's turned out okay.
For sure. And so what was your vision for Freight House when you opened?
I'd had a lot of people in some of the other cities I'd worked in. Like in New York, some people approached me about a restaurant. In Chicago, I just knew that I think I always thought I wanted to be my own boss. You know, you work for people for so long in this industry, and it teaches you a lot of things that you definitely want to carry on in your own space, and then things that you want to avoid, like the plague, in your own space. And so I think that what I really wanted was to create this space that was very technique driven, but felt very comfortable, and you didn't realize some of the fine dining touches that were happening. It definitely needed to be available for all people. And I wanted to really push this like work-life balance inside my space. So
was that something that you learned in the restaurants you were working in before? I mean, what kind of restaurants did you work in? Were they typical kitchens, male-dominated kitchens?
Yeah. So I have actually never had a female chef. I've never worked under a female chef in my entire career. There were some times where I was the only female in the kitchen. I started you know, professionally, I got into it a little bit later, but even like at an early kind of young age of 15, where I'm like working in a pizza shop, I'm the only girl, you know, a lot of those times it happened. And so I just really, and it was more about like the work-life balance of being able to be happy going to work every day because you knew you were having some days coming off, or you weren't going to be putting this, or if you wanted to ask off to go to a wedding, you could get those days off. Because there were many times in my career where, you know, I worked, you know, 20, 30 days straight with no day off, and then would ask for a Sunday off to go do something and be told no. So, you know, that was just really important to me in the space that I created.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you manage that work-life balance for yourself and your employees. Since we're on that topic, we could get to the food part later.
You know, it's interesting that you say, like, let's talk about that and we'll get to the food part later. It is just, I have found, now the Freight House has been open almost 9 years, and I have found that the most beneficial thing I can do for this restaurant is to pay people on time, to allow them to have time off to celebrate or mourn or do anything, something that they feel is important enough to not be at work. It's got to be important to them. And I also have really strived to support families. You know, I get that, like, now, especially me, a young mother, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I've really tried to push for people to feel like it's okay to take a day off and go see your child's play. Like, it's okay to come in a couple hours late because you want to go see your kid in the symphony concert. You know, like, it's okay. Whatever you need, we're here to support you. And, you know, to do that effectively, you end up with employees that stay for a very long time. They stay for a long time. They're paid well here. They have retirement plans here. They have, you know, access to some incentives and some benefits that you may not normally see in a restaurant. And, you know, so by making those things very important, I am able to maintain a staff that is here for a very long time. And that is a good thing in a restaurant, because it costs money to train people. And when you're not training people and having tons of turnover, you can put that money like into the employee's pocket. And so it's a nice, it's always a nice touch, nice thing to do.
It's such a great model for other restaurateurs too. I mean, to follow. I hope it infiltrates the whole industry eventually. But
you know, and just to like, to say that, I don't think that this model could have existed as successfully in a big city. So, you know, we're in a small town, we're in Paducah, Kentucky. We are open 5 days a week for supper only. What that does is that allows me to offer every person a full-time position if they want one. And that is what most of like the back of the house, the management, you know, maybe sometimes the front of the house, they don't want to work 5 days, that's fine. But I have other people, I'm going to put you on the schedule. You don't even have to look at it. Tuesday through Saturday, be here at 1:30 and go home when it's closed. However long, if you need extra, come in early, you ask. But I don't know that that happens in a larger city, because, you know, a lot of times rent is a lot higher and they're open for lunch. They're open for brunch. We're closed every single Sunday and Monday. There is nothing you could do that could get me to open this restaurant on a Sunday. Well, I mean, I said there maybe is something, but you know, like it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a consensus among employees that they're okay with it. So, you know, this model couldn't have taken place in a big city where rent was extremely high.
Right. And how does Paducah like support an independent restaurant? I mean, is it just the population that's your customer base, or do you get lots of tourists and visitors from other places?
Yeah. So Paducah is this interesting place. We are a UNESCO city, so we're a World Heritage Site. We have a designation for folk art and craft. The city itself is about 27,000 people, not that big. Then you add in the county, you know, you're up to about 70,000. But what you see is that the kind of the largest big cities are at least an hour and a half to 2 hours away. You know, you got to go down to Nashville, or you got to go, you know, to Cape Girardeau or St. Louis or something like that. So Paducah serves a very large population. We're actually known as like a micropolitan, probably serving about 1 million people as its home base, even though only about 27,000 live in the city limits.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have people that travel from all over the country and the world to come and eat here. Top Chef has been great for that. You know, Chopped, and all the TV and everything has been really good for that. So,
well, I'll definitely have to visit someday. I've never been there.
Yeah. You're not far. How far are you from here?
Well, I'm in New York, but I love Kentucky. So
it's a super easy flight. You just go New York to Charlotte, right over to Paducah. You fly into our beautiful new airport. Very easy.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely on my list now. So tell me a little bit about the menu and how the impact of your mother and grandmother kind of comes into play on the menu as well.
So, you know, I remember sitting around with my folks and really talking about what is this menu going to look like? So there was this huge snowstorm in Paducah. I had just moved home from Chicago. I knew I was going to open the restaurant. We had started to look at lots of properties. Snowstorm comes in. And that is the week that I wrote my business plan, sample menu, sample schedules, the whole thing. And, you know, my dad was like looking at it. He was like, what is this menu? I was like, I just really want this to be a menu that's like, I wish my grandmother had cooked this for me. I wanted the dishes and all of the items and everything that was on the menu to feel nostalgic and to be whimsical and to take you back to kind of a place where, you know, you like, I wanted the food to evoke memories. And so, you know, that's a lot of what we do. We cook things that are traditional Appalachia or Jewish foods. And my father's from Appalachia. My mother is Jewish, but from Greenville, Kentucky. You know, her family hasn't been here very long in America. And I wanted that food. That's what I wanted to go on the plate. I wanted big portions. I wanted a wholesome food. I wanted a very, you know, a very lighthearted atmosphere. And so that's kind of how the food plays out too.
So what are some of the menu items? Can you describe a couple that are your favorites?
Well, by far my favorite. And I mean, I could eat this every single day and I could take the components of this one dish and like break them apart and eat them for every meal in a day. It's probably, it's our most popular and it's been on the menu since day one and we have never changed the preparation of it. We do this braised pork shoulder. So in Paducah, pork shoulder or pork butt barbecue is king. So everyone smokes it. It's served between two pieces of white bread, which you smash together. And in between that white bread, you put layers of coleslaw and tons of barbecue sauce. It's delicious. It's wonderful. So how do I remake that dish? I don't have access to a smoker and we were first starting out. So what we do is we brine pork shoulder. We portion it and brine it in like a smoky brine. It then gets braised with Dr. Pepper, dried prunes and cranberries, tons of chilies, smoked peppers, just so, so delicious. We serve that. It braises overnight. So that's the kind of the meat component. It also comes with sweet greens, which are cooked kind of in an Appalachia style. They're very sweet and very vinegary. Fresh purple hull, black eye, pink lady, crowder, whatever type of fresh field pea we have. And then we serve it with bacon fat cornbread, fennel aioli, raw red onion, torn basil. The skillets that we use are still my grandmother, skillets. So this dish to me is like, if you're not really comfortable and you're not really sure what to order, get the pork shoulder. You're going to love it. If you've been here a million times, some people only ever order the pork shoulder. Like they can't get away from it. It's just everything you need on like a hot or cold day. It's just my favorite dish of all of them.
Sounds fabulous. And I saw a picture of the chess pie that looks so amazing to me.
Well, I would preface that with saying which chess pie, because I'm gonna guess that so when we first opened the restaurant, my mother was here every single day. She retired after being a social worker for over 30 years. She was retired for just a couple of days. And then she moved over to help me open Freight House. She had always, my mother is an amazing cook. She probably should have been a chef in this life or maybe she was in another life. amazing, especially with pastries and pies and cakes. I would guess that she has probably put 30 different chess pies on the menu. And now our pastry chef, we have a professional pastry chef. She switches them up all the time. My favorite chess pie that she does is the chocolate buttermilk chess pie. So good. But she also does this like peanut butter one. I mean, there's just like, you know, chess pies galore. So I don't know which one you saw, but I
Well, it had a lot of garnishes on top. It almost looked like cookies on top, and it was kind of pale in color.
Probably, I mean, like around New Year's, we always do like a champagne chest pie. We do, you might not know what they are, but we do like a goo goo cluster chest pie, which is like a Nashville thing.
Right. I know.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many chest pies. We'll do like a sweet tea hibiscus chest pie. You can make it, people say you can pickle anything. You can make anything into a chest pie.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. And since you're in Kentucky, bourbon has to have a big presence too. And on the drink side of the menu, what are some of the cocktails that you do with bourbon?
Yeah, so we are very proud. We've been awarded one of America's best bourbon bars, I think 7 or 8 years in a row. The cocktails, you know, the cocktails, we try to mimic the food that we do. They're seasonal cocktails. They change with the seasons. You can't always get them. But we do have some classics that we never get rid of. Mine is definitely going to be the Owens Island. So are you in Manhattan?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have this little island, you know, we're a river town. We're right on the Ohio River, right where the Ohio and the Cumberland and kind of like right upstream from where the Mississippi comes into it. But there's this little island out in front of Paducah called Owens Island. Mm. And so we were developing cocktails. We wanted to put a Manhattan on the menu and we decided to name it the Owens Island. It's like our little Manhattan out there.
Yeah, cool.
And it's just a really delicious cocktail. We always use a rye whiskey in it, or, you know, like a rye based, whiskey, a little cherry liqueur, a little, orange bitters. It's not overcomplicated. It's a reinvention of a classic, which is the type of food that we try to do. So that cocktail goes perfectly with it.
Hmm. And on the bourbon side, you use a lot of local bourbons, I would assume, because you're in Kentucky.
Yeah. So, you know, our location is kind of interesting when you talk about Kentucky. Central Kentucky is when you think of like bourbon land. Central Kentucky is a little bit more of what you're thinking of. Mm-hmm. But we're in Western Kentucky. There are quite a few distilleries down here in Western Kentucky. And we have, like right now, we have barrel picks from both of those areas. People don't realize that probably the first bourbon that was ever distilled was right around Paducah, Kentucky. Bernheim, who's one of the original guys, later became Stitzel-Weller. His horse carriage broke down in Paducah and he started distilling here. He then moved to Central Kentucky. Mm. You know, and a lot of that comes from our topography here in Kentucky is very similar to, you know, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, all those things where whiskey making had been going on forever. Mm. They came over here. The topography is the same. So that's why we do mutton barbecue a lot here, you know, which is an old sheep, because there were so many people here with sheep, farming sheep, just because of the topography. So
are there any crops that are, you know, indigenous to your area that you use in the menu, like vegetables and fruits?
Yeah. So we have a few things. You know, we're too far down for ramps, which is one of my favorite ingredients. But what we do have a lot of here are pawpaws. So have you ever had a pawpaw?
I don't think so. I know what they are, but I've never had one, I don't think. Look,
they have these horrible, big, huge black seeds all throughout them. But the consistency is very similar to, I'm going to turn my phone off really quick, make sure it's silent. The consistency is very similar to almost like banana pudding, or if you've ever had durian, that same kind of durian texture. They have this like kind of banana mango flavor. They're delicious and they're indigenous to this area. I think the other one that we use a lot in cooking here is sorghum. Mm-hmm. So sorghum is a huge crop here in Kentucky. A lot of people use it for like a filler, kind of like as millet or something like that. But we use the sugar cane. So we cut down the canes, we let them dry in the field for a few days. We then roll them through a press, getting all the juice out the same way they would do for rum. You cook that juice down over an open fire, similar to maple syrup, and you are left with this really thick, like honey syrup that has a little smokiness to it because it's cooked over fire. It's wonderful. People will sometimes call it sorghum molasses just because of the consistency, but it's not the same as molasses at all.
So interesting.
So good.
Well, tell me a little bit about your experiences on Top Chef. And you were one of them, sounded like you have a really good story connected to it when you were at Top Chef World Stars, and you just had had a baby and you were trying to nurse your baby, but she wasn't with you. So tell me that whole story.
So I got lucky. I got to do Top Chef twice. I did the first season when it was in Kentucky. And spoiler alert, skip this if you don't want to know, or just listen and pretend like you didn't hear it. I got second place on that one. And then I was asked to come back and do Top Chef World All-Stars, where I, again, got second place. So I've done pretty good. I haven't been able to take home the crown yet. But on the second one, I had a 9-month-old baby. And it was right during the formula shortage, during after COVID. And I have always breastfed my children and have been lucky to be able to do that. When I decided to go on the show, I decided I was going to pump and ship milk home from overseas for the entirety of the trip. I wasn't ready to give up breastfeeding just because I wanted to go do this. And that's part of what I talk about with this work-life balance, is we shouldn't have to choose between fulfilling dreams and feeding our children. And a lot of times women in this industry and men, we're forced to decide between family and this career. So I just decided I was going to pump the whole time and ship it home. And I did. And as soon as I got home, that baby, she's back on it. She latched right back on. It also was this opportunity to, people have become more comfortable with breastfeeding, but they're still not super comfortable with the fact that women pump. Like in public, if you see someone pumping, it's a little more awkward than seeing someone breastfeed. So I felt like it was a really great opportunity to showcase what women do and what we're willing to do to support our children.
Yeah, for sure. And you were in London, right? Or in some?
I was in London and in France, and in Paris. Wow. Yep.
Wow, that's very inspirational. I think a lot of women should listen and follow that lead.
Yeah.
So you sound incredibly busy with your family and your restaurant, but you're also very active in a few nonprofit causes. So can you tell me about those?
Yeah. So I sit on the board for a couple different nonprofit, one quasi-governmental association here in Paducah that I work with, Easter Seals, who provide services for developmentally delayed adults and children. I am on our CVB board, so our Convention and Visitors Board. It's one that I have really taken to heart. I love to promote Paducah and the tourism. I'm in the hospitality industry, so it works perfect. But I also have been really involved with the Columbia Theater and Maiden Alley, which are two art house cinemas. One is very small. One has yet to be completely gotten back up and running. You know, at one point I had a barbecue team. This was before COVID, and we've had trouble getting it back together. But we had a barbecue team that did nothing but raise funds for the historic restoration of one of these theaters. You know, and that's, again, just to go back to it, that's part of the reason I moved home to Paducah. That's part of the reason I designed this restaurant with this menu and these hours, is I get to be involved in my community. I get to be as involved as I want. And I get to be a mover and a shaker if I want to. If I want to go in front of the city commission and complain about something or show my support for something, I will. And you don't always get that in a big city. It's hard to stand out.
And I'm sure you get a lot of support in return because you're doing such great things for the town.
Yep. This city is just this city. This, and what is also great about this city is that another restaurant opens up, we don't see it as competition. Like, because for us, it's the more the merrier. The more we have, the more we have to offer. So, you know, we are constantly helping each other. You know, it's just a kind of a different mentality. And plus, Paducah's locale. Okay, so we're kind of Southern. We're kind of Midwestern. Midwestern people are the nicest people you're going to meet. Southern people are the most courteous, generous people. I mean, it's like the epicenter of being sweet and good to each other. So Paducah just that is what flows out of us. And so, so I just love it here.
Well, I hope everybody who listens doesn't move there, because then you'll have like a population explosion, because it looks like the perfect place to live.
We have had quite a few people over the years. I mean, we've had tons of residents that have moved from big cities to Paducah. They could work remotely. They could sell their house in a big city and move here and buy a huge plot of land with an amazing house. You know, like things just cost less. Life is easy in a place like Paducah, just as easy as can be.
Well, let's talk about the, you know, what's in store for you and Freight House going forward this year. Do you have any plans to change things up or to add things or whatever?
You know, my husband and I, we have recently purchased the building that we exist in. And so we have plans for the space next door. Those are probably, you know, a year or two out, but we do have those plans. I am currently working on a cookbook, so that will be fun. We're super excited for that. And that has been a whole new experience for me. Cause you know, TV, you learn so much about doing TV and it's a whole new experience. And now writing a cookbook, it's a whole new experience. And I love learning. So it's been really nice to get to do that. Yeah. But I mean, we'll just keep changing the menu. We'll keep treating our customers and our employees well. We'll just keep chugging along.
Do you think you'll ever go on a Top Chef competition again?
It would have to be like Top Chef Universe, because I just don't know how, like, I don't know how you top chef, like world all-stars.
Right.
But, you know, I have done other culinary competitions since then. So I've won, you know, Chopped, like All-American Showdown, which was more of a tournament style, kind of awarded like best chef in America. And I have also filmed a couple more, you know, cooking competitions, currently working on maybe my own TV show with some people. And we'll just keep it interesting and exciting. Keep doing whatever I can do to get butts in my seats and people here in Paducah.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Your passion for Paducah is contagious. You can download this episode of Menu Feed and past podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Pat Kobe.